This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and threw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward, so grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. Anookshuk has what you're looking for. Anookshuk's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Anookshuk delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Anookshuk is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Anookshuk Professional Dog Food. It's that time of week. It is another episode of What's Up Wednesday, where we are going to get all of our canine training know-how. And this one is loaded. So if you follow me on social media, I've been trying to post some reels with the scent imprinting process. I get a lot of questions. I've got some good feedback, some not so good feedback. So we are going to talk about that for this episode. Before we get started, it's November today. Yeah, this weekend was the first weekend of our muzzleloader season, and I know I've seen some really nice deer being taken. I follow that Star City Whitetails, a lot of my friends were posting pictures. So I'm not hunting. I have spent the better part of this weekend, other than being at a volleyball tournament, because that's what we do, right? I'm working on my quote in parentheses, my air parentheses, you can't see them, but I'm working on my pole barn, i.e. it is going to be basically my so-called garage so I can get my boat out of the weather. I can't stand it being out. I've got it tarped and covered up here in the driveway. So hopefully in the next 3 weeks, I've got a roof to put it under. And then maybe in the spring, I can start doing some enclosing on it. But yeah, I want to get that out of the weather. So today, we actually got the four corner post set. And guys, listen, I used an auger, so I didn't do it by hand, but the holes are all 4 foot deep. I spent Friday evening putting a 6-inch foundation in it. Like, I just poured concrete in the bottom of the hole. It was about 6 inches deep, so I could set the post on top of it. And today we set, time we got the batter board up and got everything squared up. It's still not perfect. It's a half inch, give or take, and I'm not real happy with that. But after beating my brains out, digging these holes a little bit lopsided, that's what I spent the day on. So, yeah, we're going to take it. My rafters will be delivered, or my trusses will be delivered on the 12th. So hopefully we can have a barn raising. That's what they call it, is a barn raising. So hopefully we can get it under roof before bear season comes in. That's my hopes. I'm praying that the weather stays nice, so at least can get that accomplished. And then, like I said, after into springtime sometime, probably February, March, that way it's not turkey season, right? Comes in mid-April. Try to get it enclosed a little bit and make it just a little bit better than what it's starting out to be. But that was my weekend. I didn't get to hunt. Like I said, I spent several hours at a volleyball, five hours yesterday at Maddie's volleyball. So anyway, that's what I've been into. So I want to tell you about a training issue that I'm having and what I'm doing to kind of cure it. So, you talk about genetics. We talk about genetics all the time, and you have good genetics and bad genetics. You know, it's either in their DNA or it's not. So I raised a female named Pearl. You've heard me talk about her. She's the one that I've got pups out of right now. Those pups will be 5 months old this month. So they're 4 and a half, getting closer to 5 months old. So Pearl's 6. And when she was a puppy, and I say a puppy, I mean that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 month old, she literally would chase cars. A hound, yes. She would chase cars. And for the ones of you the very few of you that actually know where I live, my house sits off of the main road, which is, i.e., it's dirt. I live on a gravel road. But my house sits probably close to 250 to 300 yards off of the main road. She would be in the yard. A car would go down the main road, and that little huzz would take off around the fence, down the driveway, and gone. Just, and I couldn't stand it. Like, I'm telling you, it burnt me up. And there were several days that I spent hours chasing her. She'd go down the road one way or down the road the other way, and I'd have to go round them up. And I had another pup with her at the time, so I had two doing it instead of one, right? Monkey see, monkey do. And he had no interest in doing it. But after two or three times of her doing it, then he joined in. So I have got a litter of pups out of her that are, like I just said, they're the C litter. Cheetah is what I call one of them. And the other one, I'm not sure where I'm going with his name yet. We've kind of been all over the place. But so I got two males. And over the last couple of weeks, they are chasing my neighbors up and down the driveway. So And I have a right of way on the corner of my property. And when Rob and Chloe go up the driveway, they're getting where they're chasing them. So a couple of days I've had them out, and when I'm having them out, I'm usually feeding, cleaning pens, watering dog, doing chores, right? So sometimes it slips my mind that, okay, wait a second, you need to be prepared for this. So this past week, I told myself no more. Like, I have this. Like, it is not acceptable for me. So I know that everybody uses different equipment, but I'm just going to tell you what I'm using and why I'm using it. So I have several different electronic collars, e-collars, because of my training that I do with the law enforcement guys. So I've got a Garmin Pro 550. I've got a Dogtra Edge. I've got a Dogtra 1900S. So anyway, the 1900 has a very, very, very strong vibrate. And when I say strong, like, it's stronger than the Garmin ever thought about being. So I use that in different applications, right? So when we are teaching our dogs to do a building clearing, and we want the dog to hold a hallway, and we don't want to shout out down in the middle of the search, what we do is we use the vibrate. So when we vibrate the dog, we pair that with the down, and the dog, when he feels it, boom, he'll sit down and hold. So that's one of the ways that we use the vibrate in the other training that I do. So what I have decided to do, I've got to split the rascals up. Can't let them out at the same time because I don't want this going on. And the other day I was able to get Cheetah, and now, listen, I was paying attention for it. Like, I was watching for it. I was baiting him, right? I was like, okay, I want you to do this. And, you know, Chloe usually comes up the driveway in the evenings after she – if I see her in the field feeding horses, I know it. When she walks back across the top of the hill, I know she's getting ready to go get her car. So I set him up, and she starts up the driveway. And about the time he's getting in motion, I lay to the vibrate, and he's like, oh, now listen, this dog's not been, I have not done anything with them. I haven't conditioned them. I haven't trained them. So I'm kind of getting ahead of the process, but I'm doing it a certain way. That way, if I mess up, it's not a huge deal, right? Because in the real world, for us in the hunting mode, we're never probably going to use the vibrate. I'm going to use a tone and the stem, right? So that is another part of this. So he gets ready to take off through the yard. I mean, I see them ears come up, he perks up, and I lay into the vibrate, and he literally froze in place. Boop, like, he didn't know what was going on. So I let off of it, and she's coming up the driveway at a pretty good clip, and he takes another step. Boop, I just vibrate again, and I hold it for just five seconds maybe. And He kind of looks around like, what is going on here? But he didn't end up chasing her. He did not. So I basically changed that behavior by using the vibrate. Now, as he gets more comfortable with the vibrate, I'll have to do something else. But by then, I hope to have the dog's collar condition so they start understanding what I'm using them for. So anyway, so then I got the other one out, and he wanted to chase the horses. So the same thing, I let him go under the fence. I'm standing there, I'm waiting on him, and he goes to take about strides. So you know what that means. He's taking off. And I do the same thing to him. I get the exact same response. He's like, oh, he stops. The horses kind of go on about their business. He kind of stands there for a second. He takes one more step towards the horse, and I get him again. And he stops again, and he's kind of looking around like, I'm not sure what's going on here. So I holler for him, and when he comes back to me, you know, I got a couple pieces of kibble in my hand, and when he comes back to me, I give him some praise and feed him, and we go on about our business. So today, it was actually the reverse. So today, while we're working on we're setting the poles, I let my dogs out. So I did it individually because when you're working, you sometimes can't pay attention to what the dogs are doing. So I let the bee litter out one at a time. I let all four of them out for a good while. I mean, they were out for a good while. I'll tell you one on Briggs. So Briggs was the last one I let out, and this was around lunchtime. And he comes over in to where we're working, and he literally stays there with us for like an hour, and he will not leave our side. The rest of them run around. You know, they were Bishop was up in the field, and Bronx was up in the field, and Bridger at one point run off. I had to holler, and he come back off top of the hill. Well, Briggs didn't leave us. So I got to watching him, and I'm like, he thinks he's trapped. So anyway, I holler for him, and he won't come to me. Like, he's just standing there. Well, sure enough, where we had the batter boards up, and I had pulled the strings tight, so there was a string going all the way around the poles. He thought that he was like inside the pen and he couldn't go nowhere. So we finally got him out of there and let him run around for a second, put him up. But so anyway, I let the bee litter out first, and then I let the sea litter out. So I let Cheetah out first, and he piddles around and carries on. And we're getting ready to clean up because we're done. This is 3-4 o'clock this evening, and the horses come running off the hill, and there he goes. And he actually, I had picked up the remote and had it in my hand, and you can tell I'm getting old. So I'm looking for the remote, trying to figure out where I laid it, and it was in my hand the whole time. So anyway, I did the vibrate. Like, he started to chase the horses. I did the vibrate. Same behavior. He stops. He didn't go. The horses went on, and I hollered for him, bring him back to me. I didn't have any food, so I give him a lot of praise. Play with him there for a little bit, and that was that. And the other one didn't have any opportunities when he was out. So that's just a training thing that I've been dealing with, kind of how I'm handling it, why I'm handling it the way I am. So if you guys have the capabilities, or have, you know, the doctor, or like I said, the Garmin even has it. I just don't think the Garmin, the vibrate is heavy enough. Like, it's not, it's just a tingle, where the dogtra is it's a shake your brain type of vibrate. So anyway, that's why I'm using it. That's what I'm doing. And I'm really going to have to start collar conditioning these pups, because they're going to be a handful. They're doing the same thing their mother did. Like I said, we're going to go back to the DNA. Like, drives me batty. And I have not had this problem in 6 years, like literally 6 years. And now these yahoos out of her are carrying her genetics. So I hope they are as good as she was. She got injured. She's got nerve damage in her back leg. She can't feel the leg, so she can't really keep up. We hunt her a couple times a year just to get her out. Of course, she's out here in the yard and so on and so forth. But I hope they carry some of those genetics, because she has some traits that I'm really looking for. And that was one of the reasons I bred her, is because there are certain specific things that I'm looking for with her. So yeah, hopefully that'll help you if you have issues like that, or you have the opportunity to do some work on your young dogs. All right, let's go through some steps with the scent imprinting. So as I said before, I've been getting a lot of questions about it. I get messages here and there on, do I do this? Do I do that? And I've tried to drop some reels. So I'm on reel 3. I just dropped reel 3 last week, and I will start the actual, we'll go through 4. 4 will be the next step. So I'm going to walk you back through all 4 steps, 1, 2, 3, and 4. So step 1, is having some type of scent pad. I don't care. Like I said, you can't talk about everything in a reel because you got 1 minute and 30 seconds. So I made mine. Mine's homemade. I showed that on the reel, how to do it, where I got it. You can go to Tractor Supply and buy the mat that's got the holes in it. Go to the yarn store, buy you some fabric, tie it up, and it's fine. You can use a rag. You can use a towel. You can use an old T-shirt. You can use an old piece of hide if you've tanned it pretty decent. In fact, I was using a hide before I made the scent pad. So you could use a hide if you're using a coon hide or a bear hide or a coyote, deer, whatever you're using, you can actually, you know, use the hide as that pad. So that's another option. So first things first, you got to have something to start pairing the food with the scent. So you got to have some type of pad, some type of scent pad. Okay. So we got that. We've got that. So the second thing is the odor itself. And I want to clarify something because I had a guy text message me and say, I said that, you know, synthetic odors, which synthetic or man-made, and I didn't go back and look through some of my bottles, but I feel sure that a lot of these are man-made. But I'm not called up on the odor itself. Yes, I'm using bear odor. Yes, you can use your coon, your cat, your coyote, your possum, skunk, deer, fox, whatever you want to run, you can use that odor. But I will say that if it's man-made, we all know that that's not going to be the exact odor. And I'm okay with that, and here's why. The only purpose of this is to get the dogs down and get them trailing, just to get them using their noses going from point A to point B. And then I can change the level of difficulty during this process or throughout their, you know, first year of their life. And it does not mean, because I had Braden sent a message or comment and said, asked me if I was under the impression that this was going to make a bear dog or something of that sort. No, I'm not. And I'm not going to tell you that you doing this, that you're going to end up with an above average hound. I can't say that. I don't think anybody can say that, because we got to go back to the conversation we just had, genetics. It's there, it's not. But I am keeping my dogs busy. I am challenging them, which means, and we're going to get into this in another podcast, but when I'm challenging them and I'm keeping their brain active, it cuts down on a lot of behavioral issues too. So again, that'll be another podcast. But I'm just trying to get them to use their nose to go from point A to point B. That's it. And if it's not, doesn't smell like real bear, that's fine. But I would say that dealing with narcotics like I do, I know that just like, we'll just take cocaine. Cocaine has 17 properties in that odor. And if there's 13 properties there, the dog can recognize it as cocaine. So if it's got four properties, it's miss. And that could be, it could be a lot of different things. But if it's got four properties that are not there, the dog will still recognize it. Okay. So these odors are going to have some of the properties that we are looking for in the real animal. And I don't know. I haven't seen a scientific breakdown. I haven't seen a data sheet. I haven't seen an analysis of it. So I can't 100% tell you X, Y, and Z. But I'm sure that it's got some of the properties. Or they wouldn't be labeled bear, cat, coon, possum, whatever. So what that does is give the dog a generalization. And when the dog generalizes what he's already done, so he's taken an odor, right? And he's trailed an odor from point A to point B. And when he got to B, he got some type of reward. Then it's easier for the dog to take on different tasks. Okay. If that makes sense, what I'm saying. So it doesn't matter about the odor. You can use whatever you want. You can use perfume if that's what you want to use. It does not matter. So I use a couple different ones. My favorite one that I have used is, you can't even buy it anymore. Cabela's had this stuff called Bear Trail, not Bear Scent, Bear Trail. And I had the best luck with it, and I've got one bottle left. My buddy from New York, Anthony, actually gave me two of the bottles that he had, and I've been mixing it, and I do mix it with water, but I've been mixing it very easy to keep it. You can buy, you know, I use some of the Pete Richards stuff, and I've got some other stuff down there that I don't sure what it was, but I mix it with water. So I cut it or dilute it. I just want it to take on a little bit of odor. So the dogs can identify that it's something different, and that different smell, if they follow it to the end, that there's a reward, which is going to be food. So, let's talk about the scent pad and placing odor on it. Okay. And I know that a couple of messages I've got over the last year or so since I started talking about this, the dogs shied away from it. Well, that means you're drowning your source in odor, your scent pad. So you don't want to do that. Okay. If you use a towel, a big towel, you know, like a beach towel, the towel alone may, if the puppies are so young, that may cause some confusion and cause them to be a little standoffish. Okay. So if you're using a bigger object like that, you have to understand that if the dogs shy away or they're not crazy about going straight to the odor, it may be something else other than the odor. It may be the source that you're using itself. So like I said in the reel, I use 2 or 3 squirts of the odor. I've got a little squirt bottle. I showed it on there. I mix it half and half, shake it up really good. And I literally just want to draw curiosity. Like, I just want them to boop, go into it. Another thing when you're imprinting dogs, and I'm going to talk about this as far as my narcotics dogs, my detection dogs, detection. We'll go to detection. That sounds better, right? Like, if I use a big amount of odor, the dogs are really loose. Okay. And what that means is they get into source, and the source could be the size of your, they could get into odor. And let's see, that odor could be the size of your kitchen table. So that means they got a lot of room for movement, right? So they're going here and they're going there, and they're kind of picking around and choosing. And I have a harder time directing them to source, which is right where the odor came from. So let's turn that into canine or to bear training. So we know that ground disturbance is where the bear puts his foot on the ground and we see the physical track. That's called ground disturbance. Okay. So older tracks, I'm going to probably get more from the ground disturbance than I am from the body odor. So I want to use a lesser amount of scent. Two reasons. I don't want to scare the pups or cause them to be standoffish. And two, if I use a smaller odor to imprint, the dogs already, you're already pre-programming them to be able to track trace amounts. Okay. So if you want a dog to cold trail, this is going to help for that process. Now, is it going to mean your dog is going to take 24-hour-old tracks? I can't tell you that. I don't know. Okay. But I do know that if you do this and you're consistent with it and you continue to challenge them, that you should be in really good shape to do some of the things you want to do. So not a big amount of odor. 2 or 3 squirts is what I use. And you've seen me, I drop the pad. The pad causes a prey movement. The dogs will go check it out because it's something exciting. Something's went on right here. They sniff, and then I set the food down. So there's a couple different ways to do this too. So you don't have to do it that way. That's just a way, right? It's not the way. There's a bunch of a ways. You can put the pad down and put a little bit of food in it. That's how I start mine. And then once they go to the pad and start checking the pad, then I start setting the food down on it. All right. But here's something you're going to run into. Dogs are smart. Even puppies. Puppies are smart. If I carry that food out and I drop my scent pad, and those dogs have conditioned themselves to know that the food's coming from dad's hand, then they will start not paying attention to the scent pad. Okay. So that happens. Don't worry about it. But you need to get 10, 12, 14 days of good scent pad work in to get a good start on this. Now, can you do it in 7 days? Probably. Can you do it in 5? Maybe. I can with my detection dogs, but I don't want to do it in five. I spend the extra week getting them right instead of shortcutting the process. So you can do it in less days. I'm going to recommend 10 to 14. So you can do that. So if you drop the pad and they're all of a sudden they're still looking at you because they've understood you've done this enough times to say, okay, well, it's coming from me. Then what I do is I still put a couple kibbles in. I set the pad down and I set the food on it immediately, but I scoot the food over where they can, after they eat the food from the pan or the bowl or the dish or whatever you guys are using, then if they start sniffing the pad, they still get a couple kibbles of food. So that puts them right back in it. Okay. So a couple ways, there's several ways you can do that. Just kind of see what works for you and what's working. The next step will be separating the food for the track itself. So this is where it gets interesting. I think somebody sent me a video maybe a couple weeks ago. The first time or two that I actually do this, I drag my scent pad. Okay. Yes, it's the scent pad. So it's, you know, it's a foot by a foot. It's a lot of space. You got a lot of ground disturbance rolling up through there. But why do I do that? Because I want to make sure that I give them everything to be successful the first couple of times. Because if it's too hard, it's too long, and they're not successful, then you are the dog, especially if they're puppies. Now, if you're doing this with an 8-month-old or a year-old dog, a little bit different. They're probably going to win the food at short distances. In fact, the puppies are doing it too. But anyway, so the first time or two, I'll drag the scent pad, that 10 foot, 15 foot, whatever it is I need to hide something. And I will still set the food right down on the scent pad and go from there. Now, guys, this is where it gets tricky. If you're running a litter, like I have the last three, I've done three. You're going to have one or two that will catch on really quick or understand the task at hand. And then you're going to have two or three that are followers, like, oh, well, they're going this way. Let's go this way. And then you're going to have two or three or four or how many ever sitting back and going, what are they doing? And then it becomes more of a pack mentality. When the pack understands that if Alpha 1 puts his nose down and starts moving at a quick pace, I need to go with him because he's getting ready to catch the food, right? So you're going to get a whole array of different behaviors. And don't be upset if you've got one or two that does it and two or three that's kind of me too doing and two or three or whatever's left that don't really catch on right off the get-go. It's okay. It's okay especially if you're doing this at 10 to 12 weeks. I have the last litter I started at 8 weeks. I didn't get the results that I normally do. I usually start them at 12 weeks old. So the litter that I'm doing now, they're 10 weeks. So I'm going to wait another week. I'm still imprinting them. They're going to get 16 days of imprinting, probably 17. But I've made that decision to wait a little bit because of the results I got out of the last litter. And yeah, the last litter could have been a botch. I could have done something wrong, or maybe I didn't do something long enough. But I had two or three that, I mean, just smashed it. And when they took off, you know, three or four times into it, then the whole litter was taken off. And I just didn't feel like that was being very productive as a whole, right? It was doing the couple really good, and the rest of them were me tooing. So then you at that point, you really need to single them. And if you've only got one or two pups, perfect. Then you can you'll cut down real fast and know what you're doing. But just to make sure you understand that don't expect phenomenal results right out of the gate. This is a process, right? You know, I'm sure the first time that coyote or wolf goes to chase down it's food, that it's not successful. You know, they've got to figure things out. And the same thing with the hounds. You know, I've had them that I've done it two or three times, and I've had to back up again. And I've done it where, like I said, I've got two or three that, okay, the light bulb went off and they completely understand what you're asking them to do. And then I've had to back up and punt. So don't expect the right out of the gate, like superstars right out of the gate. Just don't expect that. Now, if you get it, great, but it's a process. And if you're consistent with this and do it correctly, you're going to have a head start when you go to the woods. Okay. That's what I can say. Can I say that your dog's going to be a finished bear hound that trails like no other dog in the world? No, I'm not going to tell you that, but I will tell you that if you spend the time and you do this, you're going to have a head start on everybody else, because the dog understands to use his nose and how to get from point A to point B. So before I wrap this up, I want to make this very clear. You cannot do this every day. Okay. Do not do this every day. This should be when you're starting out, you know, let's say those 10, 12 week old pups, you know, three times a week, seven, and that's through a 7-day period, three times a week. And then kind of gradually do the same thing. You can cut it down to two times a week or one time a week. It's okay to cut back. But if you continue to do this every day, day in and day out, the pups are so young, you have a very good chance of burning them out. Okay. So do not do it every day. And man, if that dog is smoking those tracks, you're going to want to, because it's fun and it's exciting. And you're like, okay, what can he do next? Okay, what can he do next? Don't do it. Do something else. Work on your recalls. Work on the pups, you know, going up in the truck bed or getting up on, you know, a tabletop or something and feeding them up, you know, feeding them up with a little bit of height. Work on leading. Work on anything else. But only, I'm telling you, don't only do it a couple times a week. If you do it five, seven days a week, you're going to end up, the pup's going to get bored with it, and you're just going to have to go right back to zero after you let him reset. So very, very important. A couple times a week, and then do something. You got 7 days. Give him 2 days off. You take 2 days off on the weekends, right? You know, that's your days off. So give him 2 days off to do nothing but be a puppy. And then, you know, 2 days, 3 days. I don't do mine over 3 days. So 3 days a week, all right, I'm doing some trails with him. And then the other 2 days a week, like I said, I'm loading or leading or just doing something that's fun with them, challenging them, just to give them a little bit of exercise. So recap, scent pad, whatever works for you, use it. Scent, it doesn't matter as long as it produces an odor that they can actually pick out and follow from point A to point B. Don't overdo it. Less is more. Okay. Less is better. A couple sprays from your squirt bottle is a plenty. You don't need to drown it. You don't need to soak it in it. Four is pairing it with it. And you should do that from 10 to 14 days. And step four is where we're at. The next video is starting a very short drag, and you've got to put the food where they can't see it. Okay. It needs to be straight, but it needs to be behind something where they can't see it. I've even taken two 5-gallon buckets, set them out right in the middle of the yard and drug it 10 foot, set the buckets right down in front of it where they can't see it, and let them follow it that way. So you can use anything to be a barricade, right? You just don't want them to see it, because you will find that some of these dogs, you're going to have dogs that are more trail minded, and you're going to have dogs that want to cut and slash, they wind. And that's something else that I've done this last litter. I've got a little female that likes to cut and slash. She picks that head up and she will literally cut corners and half the time run right to it. So I've set her out, and I've making her run a lot older tracks, because I'm forcing her to put her head down instead of just go winding it. And I'm having to use the wind at my advantage too. So those are the four steps we're at right now. I hope that helps and gives you guys some guidance or maybe some input. And next week, we're going to have mountain music and mules on, Mr. George Lambert. And George and I have these conversations all the time. So it was a great podcast. We talk about the e-collar. We talk about what's too young for pups. And we do a little nutrition thing in there, too. So hope you guys enjoy. And see you guys on the next What's Up Wednesday. Do you like to be outdoors like I do? If so, unlock the wilderness with Onyx Maps. It is your ultimate guide to exploring, hunting, and conquering the great outdoors. With detailed maps, real-time tracking, and exclusive access to public and private lands, Onyx Maps is your key to adventure. Discover the possibilities and never get lost again with Onyx. So subscribe today using the promo code K920, letter K, number 920, and know where you stand.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.